Phil, I think you have something to announce.
Yes, at Betsatoon this Thursday night, veteran investigative reporter Andrew Mitrovica on Canadian journalism and the 2014 war on Gaza. So it's very timely.
Who is that?
Andrew Mitrovica. Mitrovica. I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's going to be a forum, Canadian journalists, the coverage of the Gaza war, and they're going to talk about how it was dealt with or not dealt with in the Canadian press. That's Thursday at Betsatoon at 7 p.m., cost of $5. Doors open at 6:50 p.m.
At 6:50?
Yes.
All righty. And... again, it's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we'll be talking in about 10, 15 minutes with Stephen Gowans. And by the way, I'll just tell you, it's if you want to do your homework before we do that, it's gowans.wordpress.com. He has two pieces that he is most recently. One is, I'll find it. But one is on Syria, the attempt by the U.S. to overthrow it, and the second is actually Syria related. It's a New York, it's the old issue of the New York Times and the nasty role it plays. And I don't know why people are always surprised. Oh my goodness, the New York Times! I'm so disappointed. Why are you disappointed? I mean, they know what their job is and they're doing it, and it's your job. Chomsky would tell you to catch them at it. I have Stone. Made a living out of just reading the New York Times every day. He used to, by the way, Phil, you probably remember, there used to be a morning edition of the paper, and noon, middle day, and then an afternoon. So Stone would, of course, put the three together and say, well, look what they left out. Here's a paragraph I saw this morning. He caught the New York Times that they had the morning edition had the Indian troops moving forward in a disputed area between India and China. He had the Indian troops attacking, and the afternoon edition had the Chinese attacking. He says, I don't believe you guys. Something is haywire. Anyway, the title of his article is Western Hypocrisy. This is Stephen Gowans. Western Hypocrisy, Going Naked in the Middle East. That's pretty racy for Stephen Gowans. And then he has another one, the New York Times complicit in spreading false Syria allegations. They are legendary for their ability to spread false allegations. You know what it is? They've mastered the art of the straight face. See, they never go hysterical. They always keep this very straight. This is very serious news. I just got it, and I'm sharing it with you. Other papers go a little frenetic and give themselves away, but they're not the what they call the gray lady. I don't know where they got that term. Do you know where they got the term, the gray lady?
I have no idea, but they've always appointed
nice.
They've always appointed themselves as the people who just want to be sofa and just tell you what's going on. They have no hidden agendas.
No hidden agendas. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's the guy, as a con man would tell you, put your money on that guy. He will do well. Now, I want to make sure we mention some of these things. I already said that today it is Victoria Day. Yeah, in English Canada, and it's Patriots Day in Quebec, and I'll let you think about that. They are celebrating the struggle for democracy, the rebellion of 1837, which is verboten. Is that the way you Germans say verboten here? Do not mention that. However, that's what they all are doing happily today in Quebec. The British election, I want to make sure that I said something about that. Because what I found most striking was that not that Cameron won and the Scottish Party did well, but that the leading brain, a part of the brain trust, the campaign team for Ed Miliband was David Axelrod. Now, David Axelrod was the part of the Obama administration. He's a key, close advisor. Now, the leading campaign brain for Mr. Cameron was Jim Messia. He also is from the Obama administration. These are both insiders, Obama insiders. One of them led the campaign for Cameron, the conservative. The other led the campaign for Miliband, which should tell you why you don't need to get excited about these parties. And in the case of Axelrod, it is said that he was paid £300,000, which to me, I think, is $500,000, right?
More than half a million.
And after the campaign was over, in the British newspapers, Axelrod complimented Messier for his good work. And Messier, by the way, who was working very hard to get Mr. Cameron reelected, and he did, his next job is to join the Clinton campaign. So, all of you suckers out there, will you please stop supporting these people? Get it out of your heads. The Obama insiders ran both campaigns. I mean, we really ought to stop being, I can't avoid the word suckers. Don't be a sucker. Speaking of suckers, I think Russell damaged his brand. And he now admits it. He said that he had one of those little moments. Ed Miliband was smart enough to come to Russell's house in his little room and where he does his stuff. And Russell fell for it. He said, well, you know, our guy should support him. A bunch of problems emerged. One, that turned out that his endorsement didn't count for much. But I think there would have been a lot of disappointment because actually many people in Britain and the United States have found these parties. They're locked out. These are upper-class parties. These parties run by money. And so people don't really want to do that. They want to get out and talk about the issues that matter to them, homelessness, racism, unemployment, wars abroad, which, by the way, neither Labour Party didn't touch and Cameron didn't. This was because they all agree. You know, everybody says, why is Parliament so dull? Well, that's why. The only other wrinkle that needed, in my opinion, to be commented on, we could help a little bit because Canada, this is Canada, which is also Belgium. We've been through this. The Scottish Party did very well. And everybody said, oh, my gosh, look at the Scottish Party. And, you know, what was it, a year ago they had the referendum?
Yes.
Yeah. The exact same thing happened in Canada about a generation ago. So if you missed it, I'll just tell you that following the defeat in the referendum, and there have been a couple of them in Quebec, they made the decision that to go into the federal parliament. The bonne chance was the way Levesque put it. And then they, lo and behold, they did extremely well because you have a population that kind of wishes they had voted for independence. They're also highly motivated people and all that. And you give them some semi-charismatic personality, and they say, yeah, I'm going to do that. So the Bloc became a force in Canadian politics. And with Bouchard and then Duceppe, I remember, I think it was Margaret Atwood, who said, I wish I could vote for him, because he was a, you know, progressive on almost all social issues, but of course you could only vote for him, you know, in Quebec. Pity, as they say. But so there was a kind of romance period. But then that all has now played out. If those who think, oh, good, now they're in Parliament, this is going to mean something. No, I wouldn't bet on that. I think it's actually not likely. And so it's going to prove to be kind of a mirage would be my opinion about that. So anyway, two Americans ran the campaigns of Miliband and Cameron, and they both were Obama employees, and the winning one, I guess Hillary will take heart from this, the winning guy is going to work for her. Axelrod, I think, will take his £300,000 and rest. There's another story, which I think the Taylor Report should have something to say about, and that is this Burundi business where there was an attempted coup. The parts of it that interested me was that this all has grown out of a constitutional issue. And what bothers me is that the Western NGOs who are all there to help out, and there are a lot of them in Burundi, they're not paid by Burundi. They're paid by people who want to help out, who live over here with you and me. And they all agree that the president shouldn't be running for president because they say it would be a third term. But his point on his side, he is, and I shouldn't say it's just him. He has a party. The party said, well, he was named the leader of the country the first time by Parliament. He didn't run in an actual election. So he's run in one, and he wants to run in a second. But the Western NGOs in Washington and Paris and Belgium all think he should not do that, which is, I would say to them, that's your opinion, and mind your own business. Because it does sound to me like a constitutional issue to be interpreted by a court, and a Burundian court said he's right. And then the NGOs all say, oh, yeah, but that's a lousy, stacked court, like ours. Do you remember what the Supreme Court of the United States did with the Gore-Bush election? They gave it to Bush. And nobody told us to have a coup, or the Americans to have a coup. Would that have helped if there had been a coup? Everybody would have been happy if the army had said, well, we're taking over because Gore actually won. What's involved here is colonialism. People have colonial minds, and they think, oh, Burundi has a problem. I should solve that. Or I know the answer. No, you don't know the answer. And it is a constitutional issue. And then the other thing that got me is that I noticed there's a radio station that the coup leader went on in Burundi. And it was paid for by, among others, Soros. They called it independent. It's not independent of Soros. It's independent. Yeah, sure, the New York Times is independent, right? It's not independent of the wealthiest Americans who say this is what we want, you know, and which is true of all. There's no such thing as independence. They have biases. They belong to groups and tendencies. So this radio station, which, you know, claims it's its title, you know, we're independent. No, they're not. You're anti-government, actually. And so the coup leaders had an in there. And now their feelings are hurt. They said the army came. Well, believe me, if you had a French-supported so-called independent radio station in Upper Canada, Ontario, or wherever, Ottawa, and somebody decided to have a coup and went to that radio station, the army would come too. And they would say, get off the radio, and that would be it. That was done. I urge you to look it up. The other thing that bothered me was on this program. As a matter of fact, it was last week. We were speaking to Chris Black, and we were talking about the International Criminal Court. By the way, it only prosecutes Africans, so everybody else in the world can relax. It goes after Africans. And we asked Chris about this matter of the head of the ICC, Ms. Bensouda. Because she produced a video last week, early in the week, in which she didn't take questions. It was not a press conference. It was sit in front of a camera and read a text, which is what she did in French and English. You can go and find it. And she said, I'm watching things in Burundi, and if there's any violence or any trouble there, I'm warning you that I will use my powers. I can use my powers to intervene. Well, as Chris said on the show, and we all agree with this, I believe, that's almost an incitement to someone in Burundi looking to make trouble in an already troubled environment for Bensouda to say that. It's not her place as a prosecutor at the International Criminal Court at The Hague to say, I'm watching you, Burundi. Well, watch a bunch of people. While she was saying that, in London, there were people throwing bricks at the police because they didn't like the outcome of the election. There was, as you know, a huge violent demonstration in London. We were talking about Bensouda. Was it proper for her to say that? Well, it's interesting that about 2 days after she did say it, there was an attempted coup. And the Western press treated it as if it was a successful coup. And they were all, you know, getting ready for the, you know, the new story. So Bensouda and the ICC, to my mind, are suspiciously close to that. It seems to me it's another reason to close down the ICC, which is just one of many 101 reasons. At any rate, that's the matter with the ICC and Bensouda. And there was a professor, by the way, in Belgium. I'm not going to get personal about it, but who gets himself involved in these things. And he thought maybe it was a good coup. And I've got to tell him something. Look, if a country is having a constitutional dispute, it's really best that they just go ahead and have the dispute and settle it themselves before you start talking about people making coups, and good coups and bad coups, you know. I would say that we should want them to have a good political environment where people have some say and get to run for office. For example, if that coup leader didn't like his president saying he's going to run for a second term, he should have said, I resign and I'm going to run against you or something. That would make sense. But to say I'm going to overthrow you and then I get a bunch of phone calls from Western powers saying good for you, that's very suspicious.